So, as we know, perhaps the most prominent number when it comes to the Seder is 4. Therefore, I thought it made sense to, if I had to pick a random number, you got to go with 4 when it comes to Pesach. And that is 4 different ideas that are connected to the Pesach story. As I mentioned, these are not necessarily Haggadah Vort. I didn't even open up a Haggadah in preparing for this year. But 4 different ideas that connect to the overall Pesach story. Again, there may be times at the Seder or at other Yomim Tovim meals. There are plenty of meals that we get together. And certainly it would be wonderful if you can share any of these with your family. I think that they are, each one of them, Mir Tashem will have time to get through all of them. All of them are very, very interesting and very, very resonant with relevant applications. So let's start with number 1. This is an idea that is in one of Rav Asher Weiss's Svarim. Rav Asher Weiss, again, is most famous for his halachic works, but he also has beautiful Svarim on Drush, and on Machshava, and Agarta. And in his Sichot on Pesach, he makes an observation, which I actually have seen numerous times from earlier sources, although he didn't quote any earlier sources, but this is a popular idea, but I actually saw it last night for the first time in his Sefer, so I give it to you from him. And that is the following observation. On the one hand, we know that there are 4 different lishonot of geula, right? In the Torah, in Perek Vav, in Shemot, Pesukim Vav through Zion, when Hashem tells Moshe to tell the Jewish people about good things happening, if you take a look, for those who want a refresher, at the end of the first line, you see a reference to them. Hashem uses to the Jewish people 4 different terms of redemption and freedom. V'hotzeiti, I'll take you out of Egypt. Hitzalti, I will save you. V'ga'alti, I'll redeem you. V'lakachti li la'am, I will make you my chosen nation. So those 4 are, you know, great and good in the narrative part of the story in and of themselves. However, there is a well-known opinion, which is not nearly as universal as people think, but everyone has taught this from, like, you know, young elementary school through seminary through yeshiva, as if it is Torah Misinai. It's not, but it is certainly the most mainstream view, which is the answer to the following question. Why do we have 4 cups of wine? Where does that come from? Not why wine specifically, that's a different question. Why 4? If we're going to toast the Cheirus, why do we use 4 different cups of wine? So there actually are a number of opinions. But the most well-known opinion, and Rav Asher Weiss quotes this on the first line, in the name of Rashi and the Rashbam, and some others, this is the most well-known answer, is that the 4 cups of wine at the Seder correspond to the Arba Lashonot of Geula. These 4 phrases, each one of them deserves their own cup, each one of them deserves their own toast, if you will. Each one need to be celebrated on their own. If we have 4 cups of wine to commemorate the 4 Lashonos of Geula. Again, as I say, there are other opinions, but this is the most well-known opinion. And in light of that, Rav Asher Weiss points out there's an interesting halachic anomaly which perhaps has profound philosophical and hashkafic resonance. And that is as follows. There is a halacha that in the first stages of the Seder, in between the first cup, which is Kiddush, the second cup, which of course is Magid, and even then the third cup, which is benching, at any of those points, and of course between number 2 and number 3 is the easiest, you're actually allowed to eat or drink other cups. It doesn't mean you can only have 3 cups. Or you can't eat anything else. Right? We have to have these 3 cups, but you're allowed to. Okay, now, the obvious one is, of course, in between cups 2 and 3, because that's the meal. Of course, we're eating and drinking then. You can have more wine at the meal, too. It's not limited. That's a halacha. However, the halacha is, once you've benched, once you've had the 3rd cup, then you're not allowed to drink anything else, certainly not any other wine, in between cup 3 and 4. So we have this imbalance. On the one hand, in between cups 1 and 3, you are allowed to eat and drink, including wine. On the other hand, all of a sudden you hit cup 3, in between cup 3 and 4, it's a no-go zone. There we're much stricter, you can't have anything else. And of course, keeping with the theme of the holiday and of the night, Ma'anishtana. Right, not halayla hazeh, but kos hazeh, mishar kosot. How come after the 3rd cup, you're not allowed to have anything else to drink? But in between 1 and 2, and 2 and 3, in those windows, you are allowed to. So the answer, says Rav Asher Weiss, again, I've seen this idea in the name of others as well, he connects it to this idea of the fact that the cups are connected to the 4 lashonos of Geula. And let's pick up the text inside with the 3rd line. We're on source number 1, 3rd line. V'yesh b'zeh remez. So again, this is not just a halachic point. This is a halachic technicality. It's good to know this. Maybe you didn't know it. Now you do know it. Shkayach. Thank you, Rabbi Gali. But now I know one new idea. Maybe halachically I didn't know. But says Rav Asher Weiss, as I say, others have said this before him, there's a deeper point as well, a deeper message. Rabim ha'anashim choshevim sh'ikar ha'gula gula saguf hu'cheres v'chofesh prikas ol zarim. Take the average person, you ask them, what was the main theme of the story? Why are we so thankful on Pesach? The answer is, freedom! What does that mean, freedom? You know, we were slaves, and we obviously had no freedom of religion, and we were getting beat up, and we had a very difficult life, and now all of a sudden, we're free! We're free! We chart our own course, the destinies in our own hands, we're free to, you know, free, we don't have taskmasters, not working in the slave pits. Amazing! That's the story! That's the celebration! Continues Rav Asher Weiss, Lididam, according to, if you ask these people, in that sense, in light of that, die b'shalosh l'shona shagula, votzeti v'tzalti v'galti. If you would ask them, the first three l'shonas would have been good enough. How so? Because the first three are all physical. Those are three different synonyms. What the difference between those three are, that's not our topic. Different mafarshim explain the nuanced differences between the, what's the difference between votzeti and v'tzalti, but that's not our topic. But all three have one thing in common. They're referring to physical freedom and physical liberation. No one's sneezing at that. That's a very significant point. But if you'd ask certain people, they would tell you, that's all we would have needed. Three would have been enough. We don't need any more. But on the fourth one, which is spiritual, not about we're already free. We're already v'galti. We're already out of Egypt. We have no more slave. We have no more taskmasters. We're not slaves anymore. So what's the fourth one adding? That's spiritual. About our spiritual relationship with Hashem. I'll be a God for you. That's purely spiritual. It's not physical at all. On that one, you know, I could have done without. Mukhanim levater. Three would have been just fine. I'm not a chazer. I'm not greedy. Three would have been fine. Bo chazal, and therefore through this halacha, this technical halacha, chazal are hinting at something very profound. Davka ben shosher harishonim efshar lafsik. You're allowed to have an interruption, so to speak, within the first three cups. Because that's all one theme. So there's no message, you know, confusion if you would have an extra cup in those three. But, what's underlined, aval bein hashlishi l'revi, ein lahafsik. But you cannot have anything extra, anything that would in any way interrupt or confuse the message in between cup three and cup four. Because what's happening in between three and four? That's the transition from physical, to spiritual. Ki ikur ha-gu'ula, Gulas hanefeshi al gulatenu v'alpadus nafshenu anu modim umahalim. The whole purpose of the physical freedom was so that we would have the freedom on every level, including emotional, psychological, chronological, v'chule, so that we could worship Hashem. If your whole day is spent from the moment you go to sleep at midnight till the time you wake up at dawn in backbreaking labor, and any time you're not in the slave pits, you're just exhausted, who has time to go to a shir? Who has the energy to go to a shir? Who could daven? Who could serve Hashem? You have nothing. So why were we freed? What was the ultimate purpose, ultimate goal, the ultimate telos of our freedom? So that we should be able to then serve Hashem. And therefore, in order to make sure that message isn't lost, that the whole purpose of the first three is to get to the four. That's why we are not allowed to have any drink or anything extra, so to speak, to confuse, to separate the message, as if to say that the three could stand on its own and therefore I could have a hefsek. No, chas v'shalom. There could be no hefsek. We have to glide without any break, uninterrupted, from three into four to make this point. That g'ulas ha-nefesh v'kirvas alokim and the Beis HaMikdash and all the good stuff. Hein heim ha-gula Hamayuchelet. That's the ultimate gula that we are looking forward to, that we are anticipating, and that we are, even in the moment, celebrating. So this is a very important lesson. I start off by saying this is not really a Haggadah shir, and it's not, but this is a profound point. You could share this. It can inspire you already now, and it could certainly be shared at any meal throughout Pesach. It's not limited dafka to the Seder, because I think the message is so profound and so far-reaching. But yes, it does technically relate to one of the halachot of the Seder, and that is this very, very important idea. It's not just a technical halacha, but says Rav Asher Weiss and others before him, there's a profound spiritual and hashkafic philosophical message in this halacha that we don't drink in between cup three and four, because that's the transition from the physical, celebrating the physical freedom, to our spiritual freedom. And the message has to be that there can be no separation. The whole purpose of the physical freedom is so that we could then live a more elevated spiritual life, to be able to have the mental bandwidth, the space, the freedom of expression, the energy, the mental energy, the spiritual, emotional energy, so we could serve Hashem. If we don't have that, then what's the difference? Again, you could say, of course, there's still a difference, but that's not what we'd be celebrating as a holiday. So that's idea number one. Okay, so far so good. Idea number two is one of my favorites. Ad Kerei Kach, that I think I've shared it. I don't know if it was this year or in the previous year. I think I've shared it in a shir that we gave, but not a Pesach shir, but a shir we gave about the broader theme of Chesed. Because this is, to me, one of the more remarkable makorot you'll find anywhere about the importance and the impact of Chesed, but its actual location, the actual source, and the context with which this idea was said is specifically in the Pesach story, in the pre-story, if you will, way before we went out, but in what was going on in Egypt itself. So before we see the punchline, which is a very powerful idea from the Vilna Gaon, let's see the psukim and the Rashi that lead up to the Vilna Gaon's comment. So this is idea number two. So the psukim in Shmot, Perek Yud Beis, Lamed Hei through Lamed Vav, describe literally the last thing that the Torah tells us, right before the Jewish people, we are told, actually leave Mitzrayim. What's the last thing they're doing? Ubnei Yisrael asu kedvar Moshe. They did what Moshe told them to do. What did he tell them to do? V'yishalumi Mitzrayim, chlei kesev, chlei zahav, v'simlaot. They were going to the Egyptians, right, and taking the gold, the silver, the fine clothes, you know, designer labels, the good linen, etc., etc. Right? And again, that wasn't just a pure materialistic grab. It was a mitzvah. Hashem told Moshe, who told the Jewish people to do it. What was Moshe doing then? He was going to get Atzmos Yosef. Right, Chacham Lev, Yikach Mitzvos. He went to get, you know, to fulfill the vow that the Jewish people had made to Yosef generations before, that they wouldn't leave him in Egypt. That when they would leave, they'd bring his bones for interment and burial in Israel, which we know happened in Shechem. But at the time, right before they left, the Jewish people are getting the gold and the silver, etc. And then, as the pasuk continues in Lamed Vav, Hashem Natan et Chein Ha'am Be'enei Mitzrayim, right? Yishalum V'Natzlu Es Mitzrayim, right? And you know, when they asked for the clothing, they didn't say, "What are you doing? Get out of here." They actually gave it to them. The Jewish people were found favorable in the eyes of the Egyptians. Okay, that's the pasuk. So Rashi, in the next source, notes that the pasuk didn't just tell us what the Jewish people did. The pasuk goes out of its way to tell us that the reason the people did this is because Kidvar Moshe. This is what Moshe had told them. Where? When? You can look high and low in Perek Yud Beis, in that immediate context. You don't see Moshe telling them anything. So where did Moshe tell them? Says Rashi, you have to go back another parak. Rashi says, Sh'amar lehem b'mitzrayim, where? Le'el. Beforehand, parak yud aleph, pasuk bet. And there you see on the pasuk below, I gave you the full source. Daber na, this is Hashem telling Moshe, who then tells the Jewish people, this is while they're still in the slave pits, this is before they went out. Daber na bazne'am, speak to the Jewish people, and tell them, v'yishalu ish me'es re'ehu, the isha me'es ru'usa, chaychasef uchle zahav. The Jewish men should ask the Egyptian men, the Jewish women should ask the Egyptian women. You should know, this is a prediction, that when you'll go out, you'll ask them for things. So Rashi puts two and two together. Why did they do it now? They did it now because Moshe told them. And what did Moshe tell them? He told them in the previous parak. Okay? Very straightforward, you would think. The Vilna Gaon is bothered by something. I have to tell you, I'm not completely as bothered by him. What he was bothered, but whether you're, you know, convinced by his question or not, his answer is unbelievably creative and mechudash, and of profound spiritual and hashkafic importance. So let's see what he says. Okay, this is the Kol Eliyahu. That's a collection of the Vilna Gaon's ideas on the parsha. Right, Eliyahu is the Gra's name. That's why it's called the Gra. Hagon Reb Eliyahu Kramer, the Gaon Mivilna. So says the Gra as follows. Quoting the first pasuk of Bnei Yisrael, Asuk Dvar Moshe. Okay, we can skip the first few lines. That was just the Gra quoting what we just saw inside. Right? Jewish people at the time, they asked the Egyptians for their gold and their silver, as Moshe had told them. And Rashi says, what's that referring to? That's referring to back the chapter before in Vishlu Ishim Esrehu. Says the Vilna Gaon, end of the second line. V'yeshla daktek. Halama furshva pasuk zeh. The pasuk told us, Ubnei Yisrael asu kedvar Moshe, v'yishalumi Mitzrayim chlei kesef. Machideish Rashi zalbazeh. In other words, the Vilna Gaon seems to be bothered. Again, I can't say, it's not as clear as I would have liked. But it seems to me that what the Vilna Gaon is bothered by is, he assumed that we all knew Chumash a lot better than we know it. If one pasuk before, right now it says as Moshe told us, and the parak before is when Moshe actually told us. Did we need Rashi to put those two and two together? Now again, most of us don't know Chumash as well as we should, and maybe we wouldn't have known where that was referring to. Hey, one second, where did Moshe tell them? You know, and if you just come to a shir out of nowhere and you hear it out of context, maybe you really could be confused. But again, it seems to me, again, I'm not sure exactly, but it seems to me what the Gra is bothered by. There's no Chiddush. It's an explicit pasuk that Moshe, the Jewish people did what Moshe told us. It's also an explicit pasuk one chapter earlier that Moshe told us. I needed Rashi to connect the dots. This is not such a difficult thing. What's Rashi adding? So again, whether you're bothered or not by what the Gra is bothered by, look what he does. This is like mind-blowing. Omnam, Yesh Lomar. We have to turn the whole thing upside down. Maybe what Rashi was bothered by implicitly was something else. Something that's totally beyond the text. Most of us would not have known at all. And that is that there's a statement that Chazal make. They make it in the Gemara in Baba Kama. Re'ehu v'lo shel Mitzri. That whenever the Torah, and it doesn't have, in more than one context, usually in legal, mitzvah, halachic contexts, whenever the Torah uses the term re'ehu, it means specifically another Jew. It doesn't mean a Kanani, it doesn't mean a Mitzri. Re'ehu means Jew. So for example, if the Torah would say you can't charge interest to Re'ehu, that teaches us that halacha is only between Jews. Right? You have to return the lost object of Re'ehu. It means that technically speaking, the mitzvah of returning lost object is dafka to a fellow Jew. If a non-Jew lost it, you would not be obligated to return it. And there are other such examples. Okay? We're not getting into why, that's not the purpose of the shir. But that's a fact. And that's a Gemara. The Gemara says, halachically you should know, whenever the term Re'ehu is used, it dafka means a Jew. Okay, but if that's the case, and it applies in many other contexts that that's the case, we have a problem. Imkein haya kashel Rashi, eich nemar le'el, dabar neb azne ha'am, yishal ish me'es re'ehu of the Mitzriim. Hakaimel and Mitzri enenu b'chal re'ehu. Wow. Now we are in a problem. Now we are in a pickle. What's going on? Go back, look right above. The pasuk in the previous chapter, where Hashem tells Moshe, tell the Jewish people, when you will go out, you will do what? So how did I translate it when I read it? I think the same way Jews have been translating this pasuk for hundreds of years until the Vilna Gaon showed up on the scene. Again, let's read it again. Daber na ba'aznei ha'am. Hashem tells Moshe, speak to the people. The Yishalu, and tell them, what will they do? Yishalu ish me'et re'ehu. Who was the re'ehu? How did I translate that 3 minutes ago? Now, of course, because at the time, what Jew had any gold and silver? Who else are we talking about? And Rashi makes a connection. Says Vilna Gaon, one second, not so simple. If we have a principle which applies throughout the Torah, the Re'ehu cannot mean a non-Jew, so how do you read this pasuk? This pasuk can't mean the Egyptians. So what's going on? So now he explains, this is where it's underlined. El al karcha. Tzarach Lomer, you must, we are forced to say, you must say, the lo haya b'yicholtam la'asot kazot, im lo asher mikodem, yakofu et yitzram la'asot chesed ish imre'ehu, azay olam chesed yibaneh. And it's only al yidei zeh yitein etchein ha'am b'enei Mitzrayim. Okay, let me just, for those who didn't get it yet, which is probably most of you, let me process this with you together. This is incredible. Says the Vilna Gaon, in essence, let's unpack this together. Why in the world would the Egyptians give them all their stuff? The Torah just asserts it, that we just take it for granted. We found favor in their eyes. What does that mean? So the way the Vilna Gaon understands it, it was miraculous, basically. I don't know if it's as miraculous as splitting the sea, but it was miraculous. It's not a normal thing. The fact that they were brought to their knees and had let us leave is one thing, but they should give us all their money on the way out? Why? And that they would do it with a smile? When we found favor in their eyes? Says the Vilna Gaon was a miracle. In what zchus did we get that miracle? In what zchus? Says that's what's bothering Rashi. And the pasuk we started with, that when it, right before they left, as a fact, it describes what happened. We took all of this, and v'Hashem, go back to that first pasuk, with the number on number source number two, v'Hashem natan etchenam. Hashem made it happen. I mean, it was a miracle that they found favor in their eyes. They gave us the gold and the silver. Why did Hashem do this? In what zechus did Hashem give us that chen in the eyes of the Egyptians that they would give us all their gold, their silver, and their fancy clothing? Why?
says the Vilna Gaon, because of what happened back in Pasuk in Perek Yudalef. That's what Rashi was coming to answer. And when Rashi says, go back, see what Moshe told them in the previous chapter, we misunderstood it. It wasn't that Moshe was predicting what would happen. Moshe was telling them to do something completely different, which evidently they did, which is V'yishalu ish me'es re'ehu. At the last stage of the servitude of the Avdus in Mitzrayim, what did the Jewish people do? They set up the first gemachim. They created free loan societies. They made chesed committees. They helped each other. Maybe many of us, myself included, come from families of Holocaust survivors, right? On the one hand, yes, in Auschwitz they had nothing. And yet, sewn into their pocket, they had a watch, they had a ring, they had a this. And a chanami. In Egypt, they were poor, they were slaves. Maybe they each had a little gold or silver they'd been smuggling, or maybe it's euphemistic and it means another crumb. And it means that when I'm starving and I have nothing, and I have a little bowl of soup that the Egyptians gave me, but I see the person next to me has even less, or is sick. So I'm going to give them my little bowl of soup, or my bread, or my whatever. But says the Vilna Gaon, that's the pshat. In Perek Yud Aleph, V'yishalu ish me'es re'ehu. Each Jew should start giving to another, as little as they have, as desperate as their situation is. What's human nature? Human nature is the more desperate your situation is, the more natural to do what? To look inward. To look out for number one. Survival instinct kicks in. It's the strongest, the most natural instinct a human being has. After when I'm so desperate, when I'm a slave in Egypt, when I'm half alive, that's when I'm going to all of a sudden start the chesed committee. That's when I'm going to start giving away miser of my money. I don't have anything. When I'll be in 2023, and I'll open up Mishpacha magazine, and I can't decide which fancy steak to buy, and which fancy grocery store to buy, and which fancy Pesach program to go to. In that generation, then I'll also have a chesed committee. I'll also have a gamach. I'll also help, you know, brides who can't afford to get married, and I'll help orphans. But now, when I'm in Egypt, when I'm a slave, when I'm in the Holocaust, when I have nothing, who could do such a thing? Who could even think of such a thing? And that's what Moshe told the Jewish people to do. Dafka at their lowest, when most instinctively would be to be selfish, and who could blame them? They're barely alive. You look out for your number one, you try to save yourself. Dafka then, Yechofet Yitram, they overcame the natural urge. Lasos Chesed Yishreu, and they helped each other. And that's what Chesed, Olam Chesed, they built a whole world. Bizchus, says the Vilna Gaon, Bizchus, the Chesed they did with each other in Mitzrayim. Then when time came, Hashem rewarded them. Ulefize re'ehu, kai al Yisrael. The Pasuk in Perek Aleph is referring to lending and helping each other. And therefore, that's why I didn't give it to you inside, but Rashi points out, the Pasuk in Yud Aleph, Hashem tells Moshe, daber na ba'azne'am. Rashi says, na means please, lashon of bakasha. If all that was a prediction, that when you have the Egyptians on their knees, when they're begging you to leave after the Makat Bechorot, then you should take the gold and silver. Does anyone think that the Jews on their way out knocked on the door, please can I have your gold and silver? Right? We were the mighty ones. They were brought to their knees. The bakasha was, no, Moshe had to go to the Jewish people and say, I know you're starving, I know you're dying, I know it's been hundreds of years of servitude, and we're in Shibud, and the slave pits, and your sons have been killed and drowned, and the ones who weren't drowned were turned into bricks in the pyramids. I know it's been horrible. Geferlich, you could barely survive. But please, turn to your left, turn to your right. There might be someone who has even less than you, who's even more sick than you, who's even more desperate than you. And you can help him, and you can help her. And then now, going back to the pasuk, when the Jewish people actually left Egypt, Perek Yud Bet, U'b'nei Yisrael Asu, Kidvar Moshe. Because they did what Moshe had asked them to do back then, and helped each other, even before themselves, then, when they went to Egypt, and they said to the Egyptians, give us your gold and silver, by lending each other, in the second pasuk, it's not mei re'ehu, but mei mitzriim. Now we assumed initially re'ehu and mitzriim are synonymous. Says the Vilna Gaon, a breakthrough chiddush. Mind-boggling. You have to be the Vilna Gaon to think such a thing. Unbelievable, what a genius. That's why, b'schus, that unbelievable, superhuman, selfless act of chesed, they merited that they not only got freedom, but got riches and wealth on the way out. So as I say, whether or not you were prompted or bothered by what prompted the Vilna Gaon's question or not,
interests me less. What is more interesting to me is, number one, is his beyond creative, ingenious reading of the psukim. And number two is the broader point, which is, if I were to ask you the question, bischus what did the Jewish people go out of Egypt? So I'm not denying that there are other midrashim that give different answers. They kept, you know, they only spoke Yiddish in Egypt. You ask me, how do I know they spoke Yiddish in Egypt? What else would they have spoken? Of course they spoke Yiddish. Lo shinat lishonam, lo shinat shmam, lo shinat malbusham. And I'm not taking away any the importance of any of those things. But we've mentioned in the past, not in conjunction with this Vilna Gaon, the Chafetz Chaim quotes a medrash from the Tana ben Eliyahu. Says the main zchus was, they did chesed with each other in Egypt. They did chesed with each other. The medrash that the Chafetz Chaim quotes, which I didn't give you, is that they had a krisas bris shal chesed with each other. So this Vilna Gaon fits perfectly with that medrash, which is really astounding. And I think this is a very important take-home lesson for us, which is that what chesed that we did with each other is what gave birth to our chayrus. We shouldn't think, first of all, that it was only from Hashem, that we were passive. No, we had an active role in our own gula. Even according to the more traditional midrashim, shaloshinu. So that's also, we played a role. It wasn't merely we were passive recipients of Hashem. We played a somewhat active role. But according to this understanding of the Chafetz Chaim, of the Vilna Gaon, it was even more profound. There was something very specifically that we did that completely impacted, if not the very act of gula, then at the very least, the type of gula, that it wasn't a bare-bones gula, but it was a beautiful gula with wealth and comfort and the bells and the whistles and the cherry on top. And so the Vilna Gaon, that was bezchus, the chesed we did with each other. And I think it's such an important lesson, because thank God none of us can even fathom anything nearly as dire as what they went through in Egypt. We can't fathom anything as dire as that happened even as recently as 7 years ago. We live in a complete, it's like a different galaxy. But it doesn't mean we don't struggle. And in the world that we live in, it doesn't mean that we don't have hardships. Sometimes it's financial, sometimes it's emotional, sometimes it's health. And it's natural, it's totally natural, whenever we're having a difficult thing, to look inward and not worry about other people. So maybe your child is struggling, and therefore what do I care that the other kids in the neighborhood are struggling? I'm worried about my kid. And maybe my marriage isn't as good as it should be, so I have to worry about somebody else's marriage. And right now my spouse, or I'm not working, or my wife's husband's not working, and we have money is tight for us. All natural. And of course, a person has an achrayus for themselves. Right? Rabbi Akiva taught that. Right? Chayecha kodmin. Of course, you have to take care of yourself. But if you can push yourself, even while you're primarily focusing on your children, your life, your financial situation, your marriage, your health, etc., to also care about other people, that's not a small thing. It's an incredible thing. And it once upon a time, it gave birth to the geula. And I think it could be, you know, the schus for personal geulas as well. Okay, that is idea number two. Idea number three, starting at the bottom of the page, is an idea we will share from Rav Moshe Feinstein. You recall in our pre-Purim shir, I shared with you a beautiful idea from a sefer that was a collection of svarim that was written by a student of Rav Moshe called Kol Ram, right? The voice of Ram, Rav Moshe. So I mentioned, after I gave it here, you should just know, in case someone's wondering, the real time I gave that Devar Torah was to the women. But then I figured, once I put all my energy and effort into giving the women gate to the Torah, the men should benefit too. So I recycled. I didn't recycle to you. You got the real thing. I recycled to the men, and I gave them the Dvar Torah. Now, it turned out to be a good idea by me, because somebody, an anonymous person, I'm not faking it, I have no idea who it was, but it must have been someone who was at that Shal Shudis a few days later. Two days after Shabbos, it was a knock at my door, like 11:30 at night. I'm like, who's knocking at my door? By the time I opened the door, there was just a bag hanging by the door. Someone anonymously gave me a gift of a new volume of this series of Kol Ram on Pesach. So if anyone else wants to give me an anonymous gift, I am open for business. If I have been Matzachain, it doesn't have to be gold or silver, or even fine Simlot, I'll take a new Sefer. But that's what happened. So I'm just telling you. So I used it. Last night I opened it up. I cracked the binding. So I thank, maybe it's you, maybe it's someone in this room, I don't know. Somebody or their husband gave me a gift, and I have no idea who it was, so I thank them. But I used the Sefer. And this is an idea that comes from that Sefer I used for the first time last night. And this is as follows. Take a look at source number three. This is a description of how the Jewish people will be eating their Korban Pesach and running. Everything's in a rush, right? Because what did the Torah tell us? V'achaltem oso v'chipazon. Right?
And this is the theme of Moshe. Moshe points out, everything about the Pesach story, the Korban Pesach, especially matzah, everything's in a rush. A rush, 18 minutes. This, everything's in a rush. What's this theme? Let's see a few sources that make this point.
So we see v'achaltem v'chipazon. Turn over the page. He quote the Medrash commenting on that pasuk. The Medrash says in the Seichel Tov, this is something that we of course know from the Haggadah. We say this in the Haggadah, right? Matzah zu shanu ochlin al shoma. Why do we eat the matzah? Al shom shalah hispik, but say come shalavoteinu lachmit achegal makarsh baruch. Right? Because they didn't have time. It was supposed to be bread. The plan wasn't originally. The Jewish people thought they were making pitas. Thought they were making lafas. It ended up being matzah because they didn't have time. So we rushed. So that right, that's a huge theme in the holiday. It totally defines the holiday because they were a rush. Or the next pasuk below that, ushmartem es hamatzot. It's not only that historically we rushed with Korban Pesach or rushed with the matzah, and that affects matzah for all generations, but matzah then becomes a metaphor not only for Pesach, but matzah becomes a matzah for the importance of rushing in some way for other things, right? The pasuk says, ushmartem es hamatzot. You have to guard or watch the matzos. And again, because the worry is, if you go too slow, you can turn into chametz. But the Medrash says in the source below, Mechilta, in Parshas Bo, Mechilta very famously has a play on words, not Shmartem es ha-matzot, but Shmartem es ha-mitzvos. And what does that mean, to guard the mitzvos? Kederach she'en machmitzin es ha-matzah, just like you have to hurry and make sure 18 minutes, make sure from the time that flour touches the water, you have less than 18 minutes, you don't want it to turn into chametz. Kach ein machmitzin es ha-mitzvah, right? It's a play on words. Don't delay, don't let the mitzvah, as it were, turn into chametz. El imba mitzvah liyatcha. If you have a chance to do a mitzvah, do it right away, even less than 18 minutes, but certainly not with a delay. So this idea, which we see in many, many sources, highlights not only the role that rushing to do good things, to leave Egypt, to make the matzah, eating the Korban Pesach, etc., etc., not only the role that rushing, the chipazon, had in the original Pesach story, it carries over into all the halachos of matzah ad hayom hazeh and chametz. All of that comes from the idea that they rushed, right? It's like such a defining aspect of our Pesach experience. It's all because of one thing, because they had to rush. And more than that, Chazal say that as a paradigm, you should, so to speak, be in a rush, right? Now, sometimes when we say a rush, even when I said it a minute ago, it can have two different connotations, right? Sometimes if you come to speak to me, this happens a lot, I'm not saying it only would happen to a rabbi. This is definitely one of the job risks of a rabbi, right? A person comes to speak to the rabbi, it could be on the phone, it could be in the person's in an office, or it could be walking out of shul. Sometimes the rabbi looks rushed. So what could a person feel? He didn't have time for me. He's rushed. Right? And the answer is, sometimes when we rush through things, we're not giving, whether it's not giving the person proper respect, or let's be honest, we constantly do things. It could be making dinner. It could be, you know, being a bank deposit. But whenever we rush through things, we often means that we're not really paying attention. We make mistakes. So rushing sometimes can have a negative connotation. Rushing through a conversation, rushing through a meeting, or rushing through any kind of job. That's true. It's true for all of us. But it's also true, and this is the part that Moshe is focusing on, and Chazal were focusing on, there's something very positive, evidently. Evidently, there's something in chipazon that reflects something positive, which is concentrated in the Pesach story through matzah and chametz, but then explodes beyond matzah and chametz, beyond Pesach. That we're supposed to be zrizin makdim in the mitzvos, be fast, rush to do the mitzvos. That's not considered a bad thing, that's considered a very good thing. So Rav Moshe develops this idea and he wonders why. And he points out, again, he just makes the obvious points right in the opening few lines. We don't have to see that all inside. But he highlights the fact that there's some inyan yuchad of zrizus by Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Right? More than any other holiday, right? It's not a theme you see in Purim. It's not a theme you see. Again, zrizin makdim lemitzvot applies to all mitzvot. But it's not a unique theme to Purim or Shavuos or to Tefillin or to Shabbos candles. But in Pesach, this is really a unique theme that we were told to leave Egypt in a hurry, and the matzah and the chametz and all that stuff. And not only that, but that becomes a paradigm for all mitzvot. What's going on? So look at the end of the second line going into the third line. Says Rav Moshe, if you think about it, the whole thing is very funny. Why should Chazal, forget the fact that it's not a negative, right? You might have thought, if I'm rushing to make the matzah, doesn't that show a lack of appreciation? Just like if I was rushing through a conversation with you, you might think, oh, he doesn't really respect me, he's in a rush, he's distracted. So if I'm rushing through making the matzah, maybe that should be considered. So it's not only that it's not a negative, it's a positive. Says Rav Moshe, why? Why should rushing through something be a positive? After all, when it comes to the actual observance of the mitzvah, third line, ein chiluk im yasenem yadu yisha kodem asiyasa. There's no benefit, it doesn't change the mitzvah. Again, you might even have said it's a negative. But at minimum, it's not a positive. Does the mitzvah get any way enhanced? The mitzvah itself. The matzah is the matzah. Whatever. The Shabbos candles, the Chanukah candles, the tefillin. Whatever, pick any mitzvah you want. It's all the same thing. V'yachol shaper l'kayim mitzvah. B'chol diktukeha u'peratah af im yishem mikodem. And if I wouldn't do it right away, again, this is like a running theme in almost any chetzi disagreement that I have with my wife in almost 30 years. She tells me to do something, and my instinct is never to do it right away. She is the model of Zrizus. And since my mother-in-law is not here, I can say it comes from her. And I mean that in a good way, since it's being recorded. Only in a good way, Mom. Okay? So, and I can't imagine I'm the only husband like this. So I think this is like more of a, you know, gender thing. Right? I'll do it. I'll take out the garbage. I'll get the kid. I'll do whatever it is you ask me. So happy later. Exactly, says Brenda. It's not just me. You saying it's not just me? You've heard that in your marriage? You're married even longer than me. Okay, later. Later is husband's favorite words. And I often say, what's the difference? It's going to be, I'll do the thing at the same level. What's the difference? So whether that is a good or legitimate answer for a husband or not, we for a different discussion. And the answer is, my wife's always right. That's just the answer. Okay, even when she's wrong, she's right. Because she's always right. Right? Right. Exactly. So are you, Mom. Anyway. So, ask Rav Moshe. You know, speaking like a good man, Rav Moshe. I don't get it. What's the difference if I do the mitzvah now or they do the mitzvah later? It's the same mitzvah. Right? Husbands around the world are loving this question. Right? It's the same thing. What's the rush? Why do I have to do it right now? I'll get to it. And yet, of course, when it comes to mitzvah, so at least, again, I'm not commenting. I'm not ruling on, no decisions are being made yet on whether you should take out the garbage right away or do whatever else, you know, your spouse asks you right away. But at least when it comes to mitzvos, we do see that there's an urgency. We do see there's a benefit. But ask our emotion, why? The mitzvah is going to be the mitzvah. We're not talking about someone who's not going to do it. What's the difference if I did it right away or I did it in 5 minutes or in a day or 2 days later? If I did it, I did it. And yet, apparently, there is a benefit. What's going on? Just like asks from Moshe, what would have been the difference to the Jewish people if they had left Egypt that second, so fast that the dough couldn't even rise, or if they waited a half an hour, or a day? Would it have mattered? Again, at some point, yes, there's some magical arbitrary line where at some point, it's like, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's tipping point, you would have said, oh yeah, now it's a little harder, or now Nebuchadnezzar, maybe one child died who wouldn't have died if we wouldn't have. Okay, but 18 minutes versus 17 minutes versus 28 minutes versus 37 minutes, says Ramosha. The gula would have been the same gula.
Were they rushing because of the mitzvah, or they were just rushing?
No, that's what, no, they were brought to their knees. I mean, it's a reasonable question, but I think the answer is clearly no. Why did they have to rush? Again, I think in the shot, we say, well, maybe they're worried Pharaoh's going to change his mind. Maybe. But at that moment, there was no external pressure. They were begging them. Remember, they're giving them gold and silver even. It's true that Paro does change his mind, but I think that impacts the way we look at the story. Right? The rushing came from Hashem. And it doesn't change the actual gula, and l'chora doesn't change the mitzvahs that we do. And yet, there's this idea of Zrizus. Why, says Rav Moshe. And the point here, he says here, where it's underlined in the middle, mikamokom, what do we see from this? Lo dai l'odom she'kayim mitzvahs. It's not enough just to do mitzvahs. El tzarech she'tiyeh lo gam kein chavivos ha'mitzvah. Because when you do something sooner rather than later, it reflects your attitude towards the mitzvah. You're right. The mitzvah itself is going to be the same. We're not assuming the mitzvah is going to be different. The mitzvah is going to be the same. But it reflects your attitude towards the mitzvah. If you're excited to do something, you do it right away. Right? No one ever procrastinated eating dessert. Right? You procrastinate things you don't want to do. Doing something as soon as possible reflects your attitude towards this. Says Rav Moshe, if you have the attitude of how lucky am I, how much do I love doing mitzvahs, how amazing, how wonderful is it to do mitzvahs, then you do it as soon as you can. V'lo yase cheshbon, shekima mitzvah, hu belav, hekef nami, sheyesh chaviv. Right? You don't say, well, what's the difference if I do it an hour later, it's the same thing. To me, sheyesh lo chavivus lo davar, if you really love something, ha-mitzad tivo. Which, by the way, if I could, speaking for all husbands and all wives, this is exactly what's going on. This is the men from Mars, the women from Venus. This is exactly what's going on every time there's a disagreement. Because the husband's saying, it's the same thing. It's the same garbage. It's the same pick the kid up. It's the same whatever. And what the wife is saying when she's upset is, you're right, it's the same. But if you cared about what I was asking, if you cared about the fact that I asked you, if you cared about, you would do it. You're right, it's not the thing. It's the attitude that it shows, not to garbage, but to me, that I asked you. Right? So husbands are dense, so they always miss this. Right? But Rav Moshe is saying, "En chinami," it's true. And it's a mistake, by the way. It would be a mistake for a rabbi to say this about mitzvot, so there's a difference. It's a mistake for a wife to say, no, it's different. It's not different. The garbage is the garbage. The room will be cleaned up. And, you know, clean up the basement, please. The kids made a mess. It'll get cleaned up. It's not going to be different now or an hour or 2 hours. It's true, it's not. But the fact that you are delaying something you know is important to me shows that you don't care that I asked. You don't have a chavivas. Now, I'm happy to stand in defense of all husbands. You're right, I don't have a chavivas for taking out the garbage. I don't have a chavivas for cleaning up a mess. I don't have a chavivas for doing 100 other things. But I should have a chavivas for what my wife asked me to do. So says Rav Moshe, that's what's going on with mitzvos. And chanami, it's not in the product. The product's going to be the same. But how quickly you jump to do something reflects your attitude towards the thing, or especially to the relationship you have with the person who's asking you to do it. And that's why this critical moment, again, I said this before when I mentioned about chesed, but I repeat the theme again. Everything has magnified significance when it comes to the Pesach story, because this is when the Jewish people were born. Right? The birth of the Jewish people happens in Mitzrayim. So anything that's important, right? Just like everything that, you know, you did or didn't do something when you were 28 years old because you had some DNA encoded in you when you were born, or because of some experience you had when you were 7, you don't even remember, right? That impacts who you are years later. So everything that we need to know about the Jewish people is what was encoded and embedded in us in our birth. So just like chesed is part of are supposed to be part of our spiritual DNA, Rav Moshe is highlighting, and again, Rav Moshe is pointing it out, but these are sources that come way before Rav Moshe. The whole emphasis of chipazon in the Torah, and the matzah, and the rushing, and the zrizus, and right, we should be, right? Shmartem es ha-matzvos, es ha-mitzvos. All of this is to highlight at this critical point in the dawn of, in the birth of the Jewish people, that it's not just about the what. It's also about the relationship and the attitude that we have. Now, he doesn't quote in this piece, but this is reminiscent of a very, very, maybe the most famous quote from Rav Moshe. Right, when people were complaining about Nebuch and his generation, all the Americans post-Holocaust were going off, all the kids, Nebuch, going off the derech. And in those days, it really was very difficult to be a firm Jew, especially when it came to working. Right, if you don't show up to work on Saturday, you don't come back to work on Monday. Right? And the Jews would say, what? Shvertze zayin yid. And it was hard to be a Jew. And Rav Moshe once very powerfully said, Shvertze zayin yid killed a generation of Jews. Because what kid wants to grow up in a family and repeat the same life? If it's his mom and dad saying the whole time how hard it is to be Jewish, why would I want to do that? So it's not supposed to be Shvertze Zayin Yid, but Geschmack to be a Yid. How wonderful it is to be a Jew. Ashreinu Matov Chokeinu. Yes, it could be hard. Making Pesach is hard. Keeping kosher could be hard. Tarsa Mashpacha could be hard. Things could be expensive. But how lucky are we? It's our attitude. Our attitude reflects our relationship with Hashem. That's the vertical relationship going up. But as Rav Moshe pointed out, in a different context, it also affects what our children see. And even if it's hard, keep that to yourself or to your spouse. Don't let your children see that. Because they can glean. Rav Moshe wasn't, nor am I, giving a one explanation to what something as complicated and variegated as how come kids in every generation struggle. But in his generation, he thought that was a big point. And I don't know if that's a particularly challenge in our generation, but I just say in general, it fits into this idea, which I think is a very, very powerful one, that one of the themes of Pesach, but really it's not just Pesach, it's the paradigm for all year round and all of our mitzvos, is the alacrity and the enthusiasm with which we do something. Enthusiasm can be reflected in the speed, but even if it's not about speed, not everything is about speed, but just, you know, you know, and as I say, your children certainly know, when you're excited that Shabbos is coming, or are you going to be bored for 24 hours without your phone? Your kids can tell the difference. And are you excited to have a Shabbos meal and be able to talk to them and sing Zmiros and say the Torah? Or is it just something you have to go through? Are you excited when you have to go to shul? Are you excited when you go to a shir? Or is it just something that you do? Right, that attitude, not only does it say something up to Hashem, which is what Moshe is emphasizing, but in that other famous story, Moshe points out that it's also something the other side of the vertical is also impacted. Okay, so that is a third, I think, very, very powerful idea. That the role of Chipazon and Zrizos in the Pesach story highlight this attitude that we have to have of chavivas ha-mitzvah. The more excited, the more we love a life of Torah mitzvos, then the more we want to do things as excited as possible and as soon as possible. Fourth and finally, we have a few more minutes, so Mirtz Hashem can do hopefully justice to this last piece. This is an incredible, incredible piece by the Meshe Chachma. And I have to say, I want to give credit where credit is due to one of my great Rebbeim, Rav Meir Tversky, Shlita, who's one of the Rosh Shivas at YU, who is barely after Shiva for his own mother, and then his wife just lost her father yesterday. So as a couple, they're now in their second Shiva in the last 3 weeks. He happens to be, as you, most of you may know, we're Soloveitchik's grandson. His mother who died was Soloveitchik's oldest daughter. So he, in the middle of Corona, gave a Zoom shiur, when you still couldn't give shiur in person. He gave a Zoom shiur, which you can find online. If anyone's interested, I'm happy to give you the link. There's video and audio of it. When he was talking about, you know, dealing, again, he obviously lives in America, so he was specifically talking about, you know, fulfilling mitzvos and having, keeping a proper kind of Jewish hashkafa to life when you're in an environment like Western culture, which unfortunately is increasingly not compatible, and that's, to put it mildly, even openly hostile to some of the most basic Jewish values, and politically correct and incorrect. Anyway, that was the broader theme. It wasn't about Pesach, and it wasn't about that. But the last 5 minutes of the shiur, it was an hour here, and the last 5 minutes, he quoted this source. And I made a note of it then, that this is a great source in general, but also a great Pesach source. And it relates also, again, to the Torah itself, to the Parsha, to the story, but indirectly also to the Haggadah. How so? So if you look in the first line, in source number 4, this is the Pasuk in Shmos, Perek Yud Gimel. This is the source of the mitzvah of a Seder, of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim. A pasuk we all know. You are commanded to tell your children on that day, every year on Tesvav Nisan. Ba'avur zeh oz Hashem li. Because of this, Hashem did for me v'tzeisi Mitzrayim, when He took me out of Mitzrayim. Now the Meshech Chochma, we don't have time to read it all inside, but basically he's bothered by two questions, and we'll focus really on the second one. But I'll just let you know, he's really bothered by two questions. First of all, ba'avur zeh, he understands, refers to, when you read the pasuk, I didn't translate it, I just said because of this. What does that mean, because of this? It's very unclear pasuk. So the Meshech Chochma understands that Ba'avur Zeh is talking about something in the present. When you are talking to your child, because of this, something that's happening now, Hashem did way back when in the past, He took me out of Egypt. So, very confusing. What is happening now that's going to retroactively endorse what Hashem did thousands of years ago? That's his first question. Okay, that's not the one we're going to focus on. But it's a very interesting question, and he has a very powerful answer, which connects to his second question and his second answer, which is, if you take a look, he quotes it for you on the bottom, but if not, you remember this from the Haggadah. This is a pasuk that appears in the Haggadah. And what do we say prompted by this pasuk in the Haggadah? We say, Ba'avur zeh, b'shah, sheish matzah, umaror, munachim lefanecha. You're all familiar with this. This is from the Haggadah. We've been saying it our whole lives. When do we say this? When's there a mitzvah to do the Haggadah? Not randomly. Maybe you should have Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim today. Maybe next month. Maybe in 3 months. Maybe in 5 months. No, when is it? The mitzvah of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim is when? Dafka on the Seder night, on Tesvav Nisan, when you have these other mitzvahs to complement it. Matzah umaror munachim lefanecha. The Meshech Chochma is bothered by something is missing. Why does the Haggadah omit Pesach? Right, we usually say there's three things, Pesach, Matzah, Maror. But in this section of the Haggadah, based on this pasuk, we say, B'shasha, Matzah, Maror, Munachim, Lefanecha. We forgot Pesach. So the Meshech Chochma explains this by way of an analogy. You can see the mashal in the opening lines, but I'll paraphrase it outside. It's he says the analogy is of a husband and wife who, Baruch Hashem, marry off their daughter. And they're supporting their daughter. Again, once upon a time, it may have been for who knows what reason. Nowadays, I guess the easiest stereotype would be because the son-in-law is sitting in Kolel. So they're and the parents of the girl are, Baruch Hashem, they're capable. Not everyone is capable, but they are capable. And they're supporting them. And it seems like every time they visit the young couple or the couple visits them, the couple seems deliriously happy and their daughter cannot be happier with her life and everything's great. And the wife is so happy. She says to her husband, look how happy Menuchadina is, Rachel, Batzion, pick your name. Look how happy she is. It's so wonderful. And the husband, being a man, of course, says, how do you know she's so happy? What do you mean? Look at her, how happy she is. Says, this is not real life. This is not real life. They have everything. We give them everything, and I'm happy to do it. But we don't know this is a good marriage yet. When will we know this is a good marriage? At some point in the future, when we take back the credit card. When they have to support themselves, and inevitably there'll be challenges, because in every marriage, in every human, in every couple, there's challenges, then we'll see, and we hope, it'll be a good marriage, and they'll be able to be happy and stay together even through that. But the fact that they're happy, living the life You know, what's that salad place that they all go to near the mirror, right, in Shari Chesed, right? There's a whole life, right? It could just copy and paste, right? No one has any responsibilities, no one has any parnasa, the husband's in kolo, the wife's getting iced coffee. It's great! Right? This is the seminary girl's dream! Right, oh, yeah, exactly. Or every Mishpacha magazine, it's right, it's another version of it. Right? So it says, this is Meshech Chachma, not me. He says, the husband says to the wife, how do you know they're happy? How do you know, this is, who said that's a good marriage? Good marriage is when real life happens. This is not real life. This is a vacation from life. So it says Meshech Chachma, that's the mashal. What's the nimshal? So Hashem says, right now you're doing mitzvos. Right now you're loving me and you come to the Beis HaMikdash and Karban Pesach. Of course. Because right now I just took you out of Egypt. I just took you out on the wings of eagles. You have everything for you. It's amazing. But take a look at the last few lines of the Meshech Chachma. Where do we really see if we love Hashem? Where do we really see what our relationship with Hashem is made of? Says the Meshech Chachma. Ratzon Hashem Yisbarach Asher Be'ez HaGolos. When there's no more Beis HaMikdash, when life is hard and challenging, then if we're still dedicated, Ve'ein Lifnei, and that's why it says B'Shasha Matzah U'Maror, not Pesach. There's no Karban Pesach. It's Golos. There's no Beis HaMikdash, but there's still Matzah U'Maror. So Davka, at a time when there's no Karban Pesach, i.e. in Golos, i.e. when it's difficult, Rakmatzu Umar Levad, Heim Shomri Mishmaras Hashem Yisbarach, if they're still keeping the mitzvos, if they still come to the Seder every year with great enthusiasm, if they're still cleaning, not overly, but not too little either, and they're spending all that money on all the kosher products, and they do this with a smile, and they do it with great love, and they have a great experience for their children, and they're really passing their tradition on to the next generation, if they do all that, Ba'avur Zeh, that's what the pasuk is foreshadowing. If they'll keep all these things, even when there's only matzah and maror, even when it's in golos, even when there's no karban pesach, then when they're begolos, shein pesach, ubecholos hem mekayimim kol chukos achag kilchasa, ba'avur zeh as Hashem li b'tzeis ra'el. That's why Hashem took us out. Because Hashem understood, just like, again, in all seriousness, why does, again, it could be the son or daughter, I don't want to be stereotypical, the children are in school, this one's in medical school, this one's in law school, it doesn't just have to be kolel, right? And thousands of couples, millions of couples, and in Yitzhak Hashem for many years, millions of other couples, parents help their children out, right? This is part of our tradition, especially if they get married when they're younger and they're still in school, and in Israel, it's obvious, right? Right, if you're, again, just to take my own children, right? If your children go to Hesder, they're not even going to start college if they're lucky until 23, 24. And my son-in-law's case wasn't until he was 25. So you're going to tell them we're not going to help them, or that they can't get married? Right? It'll be destruction of the whole Jewish community. Of course we help them, right? Whether it's a kollel, then college, whatever it is, right? So why do we do it? The answer is we do it not because of those years. We do it because we want to help them build a foundation so that hopefully when they have a real life, and the challenges, when you're not supporting them, they'll be able to handle all the challenges. So says Hashem, says the Meshech Chachma, that's exactly what Hashem did. Hashem gave us the honeymoon. Hashem gave us the year in Kolel. Hashem gave us the year or two or whatever it was. Again, I'm not going to go... the ad infinitum is a separate discussion. But Hashem gave us the time, that window where Hashem was going to give us everything, was going to help support us. Why? Not for that year. Those years are not the true years. But that's what hopefully will build a foundation so that in the future, when you do have real life can have financial challenges, can have health challenges, God forbid, can have marital challenges, God forbid, there can be all sorts of challenges. That's life, right? The rain is not just outside, right? No one avoids the raindrops, right? Everyone's life has challenges. So that's when Hashem says, that's when I'll know if you have a good relationship with me. The fact that you love me now again, the chutzpah, right? You have certain children, Nebuch, who are getting everything from the parents, and they still have no Hakar Satov. That's an avla. An unbelievable avla. To be ashamed of Shein Kamohu. You see stories like that. And I've seen those. But at minimum, okay, of course the child's going to be grateful now. The question is, what's going to happen 10 and 20 and 30 years later when you're not supporting them? So says Hashem, that's the same thing with me. Right now I'm giving them everything. I'm giving them everything. They're not going to come home for Pesach. I'm giving them everything. They're not going to be excited to do Karban Pesach. That's easy. But Ba'avur Zeh, when there is no Karban Pesach, when things are hard, when they're in Golos, are they still going to do whatever they can? Are they still going to love me as much as the relationship can still be intact as best as it can be? That's a sign. If it's still going to be intact, if the relationship is still going to be there, if they're still going to do the mitzvahs even when they can't have everything, when it's not ideal, when I'm not giving them the easy life, when there's no Karban Pesach, then that's a sign retroactively that it was always genuine, it was always authentic. But if the moment I stop paying their bills, all of a sudden they stop calling on Erev Shabbos, then you know there's something wrong. If I'll only know if it was truly authentic and genuine now, ba'avur zeh, based on what happens in the future. If they're still willing to be committed even when things are not ideal, that shows that all this time it's been genuine love and true, authentic. It's true in a marriage, it's true in a relationship with the parents and children, and says the Meshech Chochmah, that was the idea of the Jewish people and Hashem, Ba'avur Zeh. So the truest test for us, again, I think it's true on every, there's concentric circles. It's true in our own marriages, it's true with our own children, and it's true with our relationship with Hashem throughout history. The greater the challenge, not that we're looking for challenges, trust me, we're certainly not, but the greater the challenge, the greater the opportunity to show Hashem that the love is authentic and the relationship is genuinely true. Right? And by showing him that, then we hope in that zchus, Hashem will give us all the good things so that he now that he sees that it was not fake and it wasn't just an opportunistic relationship, but it was a genuine relationship, so why should he take away those things? He might as well give them to us anyway. But until we have that, this again, I think this is tremendous chizik, because the truth is, again, we're in Eretz Yisrael, and most of us will be here, not all, but most of us will probably be here for Pesach, but it doesn't really matter, because, again, as wonderful it is to be living here, we still don't have a Korban Pesach. Right? We're not in Geula yet. We're somewhere in the process, right? So, and again, in everyone's life, there could be challenges, right? The last year or two, financially, and who knows what the future is going to bring, right? It's very, very unsettling for a lot of people. So, these are challenging times. But the Meshech Chochmah is giving us tremendous chizuk. That as dafka in the challenging times, that's where we have an opportunity to show ourselves and show Hashem that the love and the commitment and the relationship is that much more meaningful and genuine. Okay? Four ideas.